Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Sullivan County, Friends of the Upper Delaware River and Trout Unlimited, and a number of other conservation partners are developing a never-sink watershed management plan. It's an effort that looks at all aspects of living in the watershed. Final public hearings are coming up, and we'll chat with Jeff Skelding, Executive Director of Friends of the Upper Delaware River. It's Conservation District Week in Pennsylvania. We'll learn about the events that are happening in the Pike County Conservation District. Plus, Workshift Live with James B. Huntington, Local Economic Perspective. And the Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival is this Saturday in Highland Lake. We'll have a preview. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is meeting with a team of negotiators in Saudi Arabia working to establish a ceasefire in Gaza. Speaking in Riyadh today, Blinken urged Hamas to accept Israel's proposal to secure the release of hostages and pledge to keep up deliveries of humanitarian aid to Palestinian civilians.
The most effective way to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, to alleviate the suffering of children, women, and men, and to create space for a more just and durable solution, is to get the ceasefire and hostages home.
At least 22 people were killed in a series of Israeli airstrikes overnight in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. The attack comes as Israel considers a ground invasion of the city, which has been a refuge for Palestinian civilians. Protests against the war in Gaza are intensifying on college campuses across the United States, with hundreds of arrests made over the weekend. In California, pro-Palestinian demonstrators clashed with pro-Israeli protesters at UCLA. Steve Futterman reports from the campus.
There were some tense moments here as pro-Israeli groups held a rally adjacent to the pro-Palestinian encampment, which has been here since Thursday. The two sides were separated by metal barricades and security officers, members of both groups yelling at each other.
Take off your mask, you coward!
Ben Cady was at the pro-Israeli rally. He said to counter the pro-Palestinian groups.
We need to show the people of the world that Jews are no longer passive and will not stand by idly.
There were several skirmishes. Some punches were thrown before security stepped in. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in Los Angeles.
Stocks on Wall Street opened higher this morning as Tesla makes new inroads in China. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose more than 100 points in early trading.
Tesla shares opened higher after the electric car maker won a conditional green light to offer its self-driving technology in China. The news comes after Tesla CEO Elon Musk paid a weekend visit to Beijing, capital of the world's biggest auto market. Also shaping the stock market this week, earnings reports from Coca-Cola, Apple, and Amazon, as well as a news conference Wednesday by Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. Unionized auto workers have struck a tentative deal with Daimler Truck that calls for pay raises of more than 25% over the next 4 years, along with cost of living increases. The agreement, which still needs ratification, avoids a potential strike at Daimler Truck and Bus plants in North Carolina. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News. At least 40 people are dead after heavy rains caused flash flooding in Kenya. Rescue operations are underway in areas surrounding the capital, Nairobi. Thousands of homes have been severely damaged or have been washed away. Heavy rains have also battered Kenya's western region. Domestic violence in Australia has been declared a national emergency. Scott Maiman reports it comes after a weekend of rallies calling for government action.
The rate of violence against women in Australia and soaring fatalities in those incidents has led to a series of peaceful rallies across the country.
Enough is enough.
That chant was echoed by hundreds at rallies in each state capital city. A growing tally of women have died in Australia at the hands of former or current male partners. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese spoke of action.
We need to change the culture. We need to change attitudes.
The Prime Minister is holding a special meeting later this week with government leaders to devise an action plan to address the problem. For NPR News, I'm Scott Maiman in Canberra.
The San Diego Zoo is preparing to welcome a pair of giant pandas. Their arrival is part of an ongoing conservation effort between the United States and China. The zoo said U.S. officials recently visited China to meet the pandas. An exact date for the handoff hasn't been set. On Wall Street, the Dow up 96 points. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 42 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at jonesday.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The final round of public hearings on the Neversink Watershed Management Plan are scheduled for this Thursday, May 2nd, and Wednesday, May 15th. Joining us with more is Jeff Skelding, Executive Director of Friends of the Upper Delaware River. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for being here. And I mentioned in the introduction to the show that you've partnered with Sullivan County and Trout Unlimited and other conservation partners to develop the Neversink Watershed Management Plan. Let's remind folks about what this plan is and why we need it.
Great question. Yeah, so the origin of this plan comes from really at the federal level. The U.S. Congress and the president signed a Delaware River program into law in 2017, and that created a grant program for nonprofits and local governments and academic institutions who apply for funding to do things to help protect the river. And it was Sullivan County Department of Planning that actually applied for the grant a few years ago, and we got it. And FUDR and Trout Unlimited and a couple of other organizations are partners on that grant. And the purpose of it is to develop a watershed management plan for the Neversink River, which has never been, we never really had one that has covered the entire watershed. There are certainly plans that have happened in the Neversink watershed that are, you know, specific to more local regions or more local issues. But this one is a comprehensive watershed-wide plan. And really what it does is sets forth a voluntary blueprint for how we want to manage our water resources and protect them, you know, 10 years from now and 50 years from now.
And this has been happening for a little while. There's been a series of education and outreach meetings throughout 2023. And, you know, can you talk a little bit about some of the things that occurred during this time and how we now get to the point where the public input is needed?
Sure. In order to develop a plan like this, you need as much engagement by the public and watershed stakeholders and everybody who is, you know, as many people as you can identify in the watershed. Everybody has a stake in water quality. So we put together a steering committee of leaders who have a particular expertise in watershed management in the Neversink, both, and that includes government and landowners and nonprofits and academic institutions. We also had a writers committee. The plan has been written by 4 or 5 core writers who also have a lot of experience with Neversink issues and a lot of history there. And then we did an exhaustive public outreach effort where we had both virtual and in-person meetings throughout the watershed to bring people in and to get their opinions and their experiences and what they think is most important. And we also met with every local government in the Neversink watershed at the town and the village level. So we talked to supervisors and mayors, and we talked to highway agencies and all kinds of folks that have direct contact on a daily basis with, in one way or another, with watershed management issues. And we think we got a pretty good, well-rounded response from a lot of people. And that helped us draft get us to where we are today, which is to have a final draft of the plan, you know, in its final review phase. So we're getting close to the finish line here.
And you know, one of the things that was discussed, of course, was climate, how flooding and changing weather trends impacted some of the problems that are already in a flood-prone area. Can you talk a little bit about some of the management practices that could be implemented that you've come up with or the plan has suggested?
Yeah, that's a big issue in the plan. You know, flooding isn't, you know, everywhere we went, we talked about flooding, and, you know, it's high on the radar screen of most of the municipal officials we spoke with. One of the things the plan calls for is the buzzword in our community is resiliency, building resiliency in the watershed to the impacts of climate change. And one of the ways we do that is through actual stream restoration activities. So if you have a stream that is eroding at an accelerated level and is threatening a roadway, and you know, when the increasing severity of storms you know, that's accelerating things like stream erosion when you have high volumes of water all the time coming down your river. And so you can actually do work, physical work, engineering work to repair areas that are kind of unraveling and are creating flooding threats. And that's a big part of the plan. You know, there's a whole section of the plan that recommends that, you know, local governments, you know, think about where are there areas of vulnerability for flooding and what are the kinds of things we can do to stabilize streams and reduce erosion and slow down the water. You know, there's a lot of, you know, stormwater issues are very important when we talk about climate change. So, yeah, we identify, you know, a whole core part of the plan was to identify projects to build resiliency to climate change.
One of the other things that was helped to develop the plan as part of some of these public meetings, I think that occurred around this time last year, was a presentation by Natural Lands soliciting public input to determine the public's priorities. So, you know, of course, we're talking about climate change, we're talking about the science, but one of the things that that the information they were gathering in this meeting were places of the heart that residents most wished to see conserved. I think it's interesting that this sort of emotional aspect of it was brought into it as well.
Sure, absolutely. That Natural Lands is a larger organization that helped us out with that element of the plan, which was open space preservation. And, you know, in an area like Sullivan County and the Neversink, it's a rapidly, you know, in some ways we have the other issue that is sort of a counterpart to that was the development projects that we heard a lot about from a lot of people. And so you have this sort of, you know, tension between, you know, growth and preservation, and you have to find that balance. And I think Natural Lands did a very good job of, you know, with that in mind, that you do want the area to grow, and your economy is a really big issue. But part of that is protecting your best places, like you say, places of the heart. So the plan kind of lays out, okay, here are some places where we think, you know, deserve long-term preservation for lots of reasons. You know, water quality, recreational enjoyment, habitat for wildlife. You know, we need to keep those places safe and you know, conserve for long periods of time, while we're also recognizing that there are going to be areas of growth as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Jeff Skelding, the executive director of Friends of the Upper Delaware River. They have partnered with Sullivan County and Trout Unlimited and a number of other conservation partners to develop a Neversink watershed management plan that is coming to a public hearing this Thursday, the 2nd, and then also another Wednesday, May 15th. Jeff, why is it important for there to be this approach, a multi-jurisdictional planning approach to manage the watershed?
Yeah, good question. You know, rivers don't respect political jurisdictions, right? They flow through multiple governmental jurisdictions, as does the Neversink, for sure, from its origins up in Ulster County all the way down to Port Jervis area. And, you know, local governments tend to focus within the boundaries of their political jurisdictions, which makes sense. That's what they're there for. But in the world of watershed management, of course, you know, the river is starting at a certain place and ending at another place, and it's all connected from top to bottom. So at some point, you do have to have a more holistic view of how the river functions and, you know, ways to protect it that extend beyond any individual political jurisdiction. You know, that's hard to do because if you're an elected town supervisor or mayor, you've already got your plate full with what's within your own jurisdiction. You know, you've got budgetary challenges and you've got all kinds of issues you have to manage, highways, that, you know, state mandates, federal mandates. And it's hard for a local elected official to think beyond their political jurisdiction. But, you know, in the world we live in now with climate change and, you know, how we think about managing water resources, we have to figure out how to do that. We have to kind of link up these governments in a way where they're, you know, they're thinking about upstream as well, what's coming to them, and then downstream from them, what they're sending down to someone else.
Yeah. So there's a draft plan that was finalized in the fall with a draft vision statement, the purpose statement, goals, strategies, and actions. I know it's a lengthy document, but can you kind of summarize some of what the draft vision statement is for the plan?
Yeah, actually, our vision statement is very, very short.
Okay,
I don't have it in front of you, but we essentially, you know, the vision statement is how do we see the watershed in 50 years or 100 years? And, you know, we want to see a protected watershed that's providing clean water to people in the Neversink River watershed, but is also facilitating reasonable growth and expanding on recreational opportunities and protecting wildlife. That kind of captures the vision statement. And that's, you know, and you're right. It's, I think we're over close to 100 pages now. And what I would encourage folks to do is they can go to our website, look at the draft, or come to the first of all, come to the public meeting on Thursday or the one the following week. And, you know, that's where they can kind of hear, we'll walk them through the whole thing. And what we encourage people to do is kind of pick out a place, you know, where they have some expertise or they have a particular interest and focus on that chapter or that section and give us comments about what they think. Because again, the best knowledge of a watershed is from the people who live there. And if they, you know, for example, if you run a highway agency for one of the local towns, you might see a section of the plan where you go, hey, you know, you forgot this, or yeah, that's really good. That's really important. That is in the plan. That's the kind of feedback we're looking for. And so people don't have to necessarily have to read the whole thing unless they want to. We encourage that. And they can find a place where they can add value to it.
The plan doesn't have the weight of law or regulation, but how does it act as a tool for folks, municipalities or other organizations or members to, you know, have this shared vision of the watershed?
Yeah, that's a good, you used a good word there, tool. It is kind of like a toolkit. And we all know through the decades that there are many, many plans that sit on shelves and are not referred to as much as, you know, maybe they should be. And that's going to be the trick, right? So you're right. This is not a new law. There's no new laws. There's no new ordinances. There's nothing regulatory about this document. And this document relies on the collaboration of the local watershed stakeholder. And, you know, I think the value of it is if a municipality, for example, encounters a decision that they have to make about a particular section of the river that is, you know, that there's something going on that they need to respond to, the plan, they should use the plan as a reference document to say, okay, we're in this situation. And somebody says, hey, wait a minute. We went through this 2-year planning process for the Neversink watershed, and we have this plan. And then there it is. It's sitting over there on the shelf. Let's go look at it. Let's see what it said about, you know, our particular situation right now. Because that gives the confidence to the decision maker that the public is behind it. I think that's probably a good example of how a really good example of how the plan could and should be used.
Are there pilot sites that have been identified to help implement some aspects of the plan?
Yeah, there are. In the back of the plan, we'll have an appendix, and it's a pretty cool part of the plan because it's an appendix of use the term pilot sites, I would say it's a project list. And it's pretty large. And of course, all, you know, all projects require funding. So, yeah, we prioritize them based on what we've heard from municipal officials. And I wouldn't call them pilot sites, but I would call them, you know, a list of prioritized sites. And then, you know, following that, or, you know, working off that list, the next part of the game here is to go out and find funding for them, which is always a big challenge. Right. But so we do have a lot of projects that we've identified based on the conversations at the localist of levels, right? And it's very, very, you know, it's that, you know, it's mile 1.6 mile marker, you know, and there's a eroded bank that's threatening the highway there, needs some shoring up. It's at that granular level that the project list consists of. And then the trick will be, okay, now we got to go out and look in the larger world of funding and help these municipalities secure the resources they need to actually get the projects done.
What does this plan mean for you as the executive director of Friends of the Upper Delaware River? You mentioned earlier, like, having something in place for the next 50 years. You know, FUDR is an advocacy group for the river, something that can't necessarily speak for itself. What does this plan mean for you?
Yeah, we're really excited. I mean, the history of FUDR, we've been more active up further north from Sullivan County, more in Delaware County, and it's only been in the last few years that we've kind of turned our chairs around and looks, you know, sort of south and east to Sullivan County. And we've come, you know, it's been great for us to get to know the Neversink a little bit better. We have a long history of originally as an angling organization focused on the tailwaters of the East Branch and the main and the West Branch and the main stem of the Delaware River. And more recently now we've gotten into the Neversink. So we're excited that we're expanding our organizational horizons. That's been a great thing for us. And, you know, we are friends of the Upper Delaware River. Well, you know, the Neversink River is certainly part of the Delaware River watershed. So, you know, and it's for us, you know, and our successors here at FUDR, it's going to be a plan that we can, you know, first of all, take a lot of pride in and had a big role in putting together. And, you know, it'll be there for future. I mean, you know, we all know how local governments, you know, function. And a lot of that is transition, right? We have, you know, people are elected and then people are no longer in office and then there's a new person. And we hope that the plan can kind of transcend all those changes and transitions and be, you know, sort of a solid base for anyone to look at, you know, 10 years from now or 50 years from now. I should add that it's a fluid plan, right? Things change, rivers change, right? You know, landscapes change. And I think we need to be prepared as an organization to, you know, be nimble enough to, you know, basically, you know, every 3 years or every 5 years, you know, take another look and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's no longer valid. We have to make some changes there. So.
It does. It's you know, people change, the people move on, but the river stays there. It may move and change a little bit, but there's always going to be that need to address and plan and prepare for, you know, preservation of it. The public public meetings for the Neversink Watershed Management Plan draft review, there's one this Thursday from 2 to 3:30 in person at the EB Crawford Public Library in the community room there on Broadway in Monticello. Registration, they're looking for registration. It's a free event, but you guys are looking for folks to register at FUDR.org. And then there's another meeting, which is virtual, the following week, the 15th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Again, registration is recommended at FUDR.org. Jeff, anything else that you're working on that you want folks to know about, get involved with as we head into the summer months and the use on the river is going to increase, of course?
We've got a couple of developments with in the further north, but that will affect some of the Sullivan County watershed. And they're actually closing down the Delaware Aqueduct, which is going to have a lot of it this fall, and that may have some implications for how they manage the reservoirs. Will have some implications for how they manage the three big New York City reservoirs, including the Neversink Reservoir. So that's coming up, and we'll have some more information about that available. And we actually have a public meeting coming up on May 23rd. Your listeners can also learn about that on our website. So we would encourage attendance at that via Zoom or in person at our office in Hancock. It's kind of a big deal when they shut the big tunnel down that takes all the water down in New York City. And we'd like to learn a little bit more from New York City. We'll be making a presentation about what the implications of that are.
We'll follow up with you on that later, too. One thing I wondered if folks know, but at FUDR.org, you can get river conditions, the current flow and temps, the current reservoir levels. There's the Cannonsville hotline, and also river etiquette. So I encourage folks to check it out, FUDR.org.
Absolutely. Check out lots of information on the website.
All right. Jeff Skelding, Executive Director of Friends of the Upper Delaware River. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's Conservation District Week in Pennsylvania. We'll learn more about what's going on in Pike County after this. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear something new by the Hollywood Film Orchestra and Skip Haller's Voodoo 5. Plus, there's music from Satan's Tiki Lounge, played by the Voodoo Organist. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Recognized by both the Pennsylvania State House and Senate, today through May 4th has been declared Conservation District Week. Conservation districts are local units of government established under state law to carry out natural resource management programs. And joining us to hear more about what's going on in the Pike County Conservation District is Emily Mansfield, Communications Coordinator and Right to Know Officer for the Pike County Conservation District. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I just noticed that your title, Right to Know Officer, that's an interesting title there. What does that mean in terms of your position there?
Sure. So I'm the communications coordinator here at the district, and part of that comes with being the Right to Know Officer. So the Right to Know law is part of the Pennsylvania law that says that public-facing entities like conservation districts and school districts have to deliver certain public records upon request to the public. So if anyone is looking for a public record that would fall under that Right to Know law, they could contact me, and then I would be the one to start that process for them.
Okay, got it. Now, conservation districts are in Pennsylvania in every county, in every district office except for Philadelphia. What does the conservation district office do for the county?
So we have a lot of different programs here at the Pike County Conservation District. One of the main things that we do is we have a delegation agreement with the State Department of Environmental Protection, or DEP, that allows us to work with Chapter 102 and 105 of the Pennsylvania Code. So Chapter 102 deals with erosion and sediment control and also stormwater management, and Chapter 105 deals with waterways and wetlands. So our resource conservationists and district engineer here help do a lot of technical assistance to the public who are working on projects that may be affected by those. We also have a dirt, gravel, and low-volume roads program, which our program manager here runs, and that is available to any publicly owned roads, so roads owned by municipalities, the State Game Commission, places like that. And that's a grant program that helps to reduce erosion and sedimentation on those publicly owned roads to stop that sediment from getting into nearby streams. We also have an Agriculture Conservation Assistance Program, or ACAP, through a signed agreement with the State Conservation Commission. So we administer that to support best management practices on agricultural operations, like riparian buffers, manure nutrient management plans, and things like that. We also have a watershed specialist here at the district who does a lot of water quality monitoring, including aquatic macroinvertebrate and fish sampling, as well as groundwater level monitoring. And we do a lot of work with source water protection through the Pocono Source Water Protection Collaborative. And my main job here at the district is to provide education on all of those different programs and all of the things that we do at schools, homeowners associations, senior centers, libraries, and other places where the community gathers.
That's a lot. You do a lot.
I know.
We were just talking to Jeff Skelding from Friends of the Upper Delaware River about the Never Sink Watershed Management Plan and, you know, protecting the watershed. Obviously, you guys are part of the watershed of it. Focus on not only on the river, but also, you know, everywhere, Pike County ponds and other places. How important is it for the programs and services that you do have on impacting the preservation of watershed and water and soil in the area?
Sure. So pretty much all of the programs that we do are in some way tied to soil or water and our natural resources in general. So a watershed is the area of land where when there is a storm event, so a rainstorm or a snowstorm, when that water falls, what water body is it eventually going to go into? So we're in the Delaware River watershed, as you had mentioned, but there's also smaller watersheds within that. So you might be near a small creek, which would be your small watershed, and then that creek flows into the Delaware River, which would be your larger watershed. So everywhere on the ground is affecting that watershed because that water is traveling over the ground, picking up things as it moves, and then that stormwater eventually makes its way into the water body. So we're trying to tackle any potential sources of pollution on the ground as it makes its way to that water body.
So Conservation District Week, as you know, recognized by the government in Harrisburg, declaring Conservation District Week, what's it meant to focus on and what are some of the events you've got scheduled to help get folks to be more aware of the Conservation District?
Yes. So like you had said, conservation districts are in every county in Pennsylvania except for Philadelphia, but a lot of people don't know what we do and all of those programs that I had mentioned. So Conservation District Week is just a way to get us out there and get some engagement and outreach so that people know that we exist and the programs that we offer. We do have some upcoming programs. So this Saturday on May 4th, we're hosting a guided hike called Hiking in Harmony in partnership with the Pocono Environmental Education Center in Dingmans Ferry. And that is at 10 a.m. to noon, and it's a free guided hike event. You could sign up for that on our website. We're also accepting nominations for our District Conservation Achievement Awards. That's the inaugural year for this, but we have three different awards, one open to everybody, one open to educators, and one open to youth. And those are awards that are meant to recognize the dedication of people in our Pike County community to natural resource conservation. So also on the homepage of our website, you can find a link to submit nominations if you know somebody who would be a good potential nominee for those awards. We also have a Science on Tap program coming up next month in May through the Pike Wayne Conservation Partnership. Science on Tap is an ongoing program that we have since the beginning of this year, and it's going to be Thursday, May 16th, 6 p.m. at the Boathouse Restaurant in Hawley. And this month's topic is Pocono Lakes in a Changing World. So we have Dr. Beth Norman from Lackawack Sanctuary who will be joining us to talk about lakes, the challenges that they're going through, and how we can help conserve lakes in our area. And then in June, we have a Twilight Pond Walk in partnership with Penn State Extension. And that's going to be Tuesday, June 24th at 6 p.m. in Dingmans Ferry. And that you can also sign up for on our website.
I thought that was interesting that the awards, who's eligible for those awards? What are the qualifications to nominate someone?
Sure. So anybody can submit a nomination. The person who is nominated should have their conservation work be within Pike County. So you don't necessarily have to reside full-time in Pike County, but the work that you're being nominated for, if it's for a trash cleanup or a riparian buffer planting, the work that you're nominated for should have been completed in Pike County.
Your website is full of great information. It is pikeconservation.org. One of the things that I think a lot of folks can relate to is some perhaps unusual insect or plant, and you have a plant and insect identification section there. Tell us a little bit about that.
We do, sure. So on our website, on the homepage, there's a button to submit photos of any kind of unidentified plant or insect that you might find on your property or while you're out and about hiking. One of our resource conservationists here at the district is very knowledgeable about identifying both of those different groups of species, and so your pictures will be sent to her, and she will use her expertise to try and determine, if she can, what kind of species you're looking at, and then get back to you with that information.
Oh, that's great. Great resource. Again, at pikeconservation.org. And more information about Conservation District Week is there. And again, let's remind folks about the hike that's coming up.
Yes. So this Saturday, Hiking in Harmony, Saturday, May 4th at 10 a.m. at the Pocono Environmental Education Center, or PEEC, and that's in Dingman's Ferry. It's free, and you can sign up on our website or at bit.ly, that's bit.ly/hikinginharmony.
All right. Emily Mansfield, Communications Coordinator and Right to Know Officer for the Pike County Conservation District. Again, more information at pikeconservation.org. Emily, thank you for joining us, and let me be one of the first to wish you a happy Conservation District Week.
Thank you so much, Tim.
All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back with the latest local economic perspective from James B. Huntington on Workshift Live. This is Radio Chatskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, a conversation with Mexican actress Melissa Barrera on her career in Hollywood and how she chooses to use her platform.
If there's only three of us speaking out, those three people are easier to target. If it's hundreds, thousands, then they can't target you.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, we speak with the Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, about his country's massive immigration experiment.
You can invite 500,000 people into your home every year if you're Canada.
And whether his progressive agenda can reverse his low approval numbers. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Having a little trouble reaching James B. Huntington, so we've pivoted to our next guest, folks from the Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival. We got, let's see, Rebecca, and we also have Katie Bell. Good morning. How are you guys?
Hello. Good morning.
I called them.
Good morning.
Can you come in now? All right. Let's do a proper introduction. Give us your full names. And who you're representing here.
Okay. My name is Rebecca DeRosa, and I'm a yoga teacher based out of Calicoon, New York. And I'll be teaching chair yoga at the Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival.
And Katie Bell.
And my name's Katie Bell Bomer. I represent Highland Yoga along Highland Lake in Highland Lake, New York.
Just a little closer to the mic there.
A
yeah,
little closer. There I've we never go. Been on the radio.
I know, and I didn't get a chance to tell you all the rules and instruction. But yeah, thank you for coming in. And what is it you brought into the studio? It looks like it's a portable piano, organ, small sort of synthesizer.
Yes, this is a harmonium. It's thought to be an Indian instrument, but it was actually brought by the British to India. And it has bellows. I pump these bellows and air goes through some reeds, and then I play it like a piano.
Oh, we might get a little demonstration of that
later.
Maybe. How's that? Tell me a little bit more about what you guys do in terms of yogic self-care. We'll talk about the festival, but what is the foundation of your yogic self-care?
Well, for me, it really helps with my anxiety. So no matter what, you know, we think about yoga as being so physical. We were talking about this earlier. But it really just has such a nice calming effect, especially for the nervous system. So I just find it just really helps in all aspects of my life. So,
and what is it in terms of something different than it? Than just regular yoga that someone might know? Is there something?
So regular yoga. Yeah. In the West, there is this misconception that yoga is just about twisting your body into pretzel shapes, mm-hmm. possibly learning how to do a handstand and posting it on Instagram. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we address the many multi-layered facets of yoga, where it's what we eat, what we put into our body, the media we consume, the community we surround ourselves with, how we breathe. And this little thing here is about the kirtan, how we chant and how we wake up our voices and open our heart to who we truly are.
And what is the kirtan?
Kirtan! Oh, I'm so excited to talk about
question,
kirtan.
Yeah.
The big question. So just like asana, the twisty, bendy stuff you do on the yoga mat, kirtan is mantra recitation in a group. So say, for instance, I'm leading it. It'll be call and response, and I'll recite this wordy Sanskrit mantra that you probably have no idea what it means. And then you sing it back to me. And it's this back and forth love affair of myself and the audience. And then we're no longer myself and the audience. We become one in song. So think about when you were singing in chorus in elementary school and it was so much fun. And then suddenly we stopped doing that. This is the adult version of that.
That's true. When you think about it, there's this unifying vibrational aspect of it. And you're part of something, you kind of give up the individual part of it a bit,
yeah.
but you realize you're part of this larger whole.
Yeah, and that's what yoga is really about. You know, it seems like anyone who has time for a yoga class or a yoga practice, it seems like a selfish thing, like you have an hour to go do what? But really, we're working on becoming better people and having it affect our relationships in our direct community and in the world at large.
I'm
hopefully.
Just, yes.
We try.
I know. I'm looking at Katie, but I'm looking at the website here. And can you talk a little bit about how you came to these different disciplines and what led you to this path?
You know, if you had told me 15 years ago that I'd be on the radio in this capacity, I would tell you you are absolutely crazy. I grew up here in Chihola, Pennsylvania, right on the Delaware River. And then I left for 12 years pursue a great career in advertising and graphic design. And I was an art director for a long time, working on big brands that ultimately started stealing my soul. So I quit advertising. I found yoga. I studied in India 3 different times now. And I moved back to the area right before the pandemic to hopefully bring some of the practices that have, as Rebecca said, calmed my nervous system, relaxed my anxieties, and connected me with a deeper purpose in life. I'll hopefully share them with this community here.
You, in addition from, you know, stepping away from corporate America, there was this other personal aspect about it. You know, you became sober. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, overcoming some of those addictions and how this helped you?
The first yoga teacher training I did, I remember laying in Shavasana, which is corpse pose. That's what it translates as. At the very end of a yoga practice, you lay on your back and you completely let everything go. And I was just crying. I had tears streaming down my face and pooling in my ears, recognizing that most of my life has been spent numbing and escaping what I was feeling. We drink to celebrate. We drink In sorrow, we drink in boredom, and I just realized I was missing my life. So 7 years sober, happy to say. Yeah. Thank you.
And Rebecca, how did you come to this path for you? What's been the important kind of transformational thing for you?
Well, it started when I was 12 and I had a physical and they said I had a little bit of scoliosis and I wouldn't need surgery.
Just a little.
Yeah, just a touch.
Just a touch.
Yeah. So she said I needed to have a stretching, you know, regimen. So my grandmother found a book on yoga at like the library sale. And she's very Baptist, so she's like, don't get into the spiritual stuff, but, you know, maybe do the stretches. And I was like, okay. But the whole thing just fascinated me. So I was doing yoga on my own in my living room or bedroom. And so off and on for many years, I would come back and come away. And but I got into it again like 15 years ago, and it's really, you know, it is transformative.
And what brought you here? Did you grow up here as well, or did you find this place in a different way?
Yeah, I grew up in North Carolina, and then, moved to New York and I worked in, media. So I worked for a, drum magazine for many years.
A drum magazine?
Yes.
Like drums.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's called Tom Tom Magazine.
Oh.
Do you know it?
No, I think it's cool. Like, yeah. I didn't know there was a magazine devoted to drums.
There's many.
Oh. A whole other world.
Yeah. So I was in that world, but also doing yoga because it just made me feel great. And then I ended up teaching my roommates and friends and neighbors yoga before I was certified. And then I was like, okay, I need to go get certified. So I went to India, as we do. And I also cried in Shavasana, like for about the first week.
Yeah.
It really helps you discover so much about yourself.
So Kirtan, let's go to the, I keep calling it, want to call it the machine, but it's not a machine. It's a instrument.
Yeah.
That's in front of us. Is there something that you could play for us to sort of demonstrate
now?
That? Yeah. It'd be great.
She's ready.
She's ready.
You can just
put it that way. There you go. We're moving the mic a little bit. There we go. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Rebecca DeRosa and Katie Bell. Oh, I forgot your last name, Katie Bell. I'm sorry.
Homer.
There we go.
Hello.
Thank you. And we're just getting things situated. Patricio's walked in to help us get the mic here on the. There we go. We can kind of. There we go. I was just enjoying the whole thing. Now, what is it that you were playing for us there?
That is Prema Hare Ram, and it is one of Krishna Das's, my very favorite kirtan leader, and who I consider my teacher. One of his chants, Hare Ram.
And what is the meaning behind it?
Oh my goodness! You know, every chant uses different words to address really the same thing. We are calling out to the universe at large. We are calling out to the tiniest cell within us. We are calling out to what we experience in this 3D dimension, in the multi dimensions. And really we are, as Krishna Das reminds us, we are cleaning the mirror of our own heart. Our lives have created this layer of dust over who we truly are, and these chants are helping polish the mirror so that we can better see our own reflection.
It's, I try to describe it for the listener and folks who may have seen this before. It has like sort of an accordion type part to it, but then there's the keyboard at the top. Mm-hmm. And you stood, and it's portable. You can carry it around. You stood, and as you were singing, I just noticed you immediately just went into a very dedicated sort of stance, if you will. Is that fair to say?
I would say exalted.
You, I mean, it was automatic in a way. You didn't, I've seen people perform, I would say. It was not performative.
That's great, because I have huge performance anxiety. One of my greatest fears as a kid was being in front of rooms full of people and having everyone look at me and having to perform something. But kirtan is not about the quality of your voice, thank goodness. It's not about performing or talent, or it's about the intention in your words and the intention in your heart. And that's something I can bank on. Yeah. I can't bank on my voice hitting the right notes, but I can bank on my own integrity. Yeah. So
how did you guys decide to come to bring the kirtan and yoga to the Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival this weekend? How did this come about?
Well, you know, I moved back here right before the pandemic. I was really excited to make community, and then we went into lockdown. So this is kind of our emergence from being on Zoom for a few years. And I wanted to wanted to teach at a local festival and did some research and realized there wasn't one. So we decided to bring the Sullivan County's first yoga festival to the community.
How's it been? How's it been getting this organized, and what can folks expect?
Well, getting it organized, Katie Bell, when did you start talking about this? I feel like just a couple of months ago.
Just a couple of months ago. When I come up with an idea, it suddenly snowballs very quickly.
Well, I think we all just like latched onto it. Yeah. We're like, yes, let's do it. You know, everyone you talk to, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, but you're like the main like organizer, powerhouse, I would say. But yeah, we're just like so excited. I want to take every class and do every activity. Do you want to tell them about all the classes and activities?
Yeah. So it's Saturday, May 4th. It's 9 straight hours of 4 different mindful movement classes, vinyasa, yin, chair, and slow flow. Then we have 2 interactive lectures, one on Ayurveda, one on the art of meditation. We have multiple kirtans, as well as kirtan leaders coming out from Brooklyn, from Reading, from Monroe, New York, to keep the music going in the backyard all day long. There's pop-up activities like mandala painting and chair massage, and local vendors selling holistic products. And tell them about Bibimbus. Bibimbus! Did I say it wrong?
I think you said it right. yeah, so there's going to be a Korean food truck, and they're providing lots of vegan meals, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's other food, right? And there's going to be tea all day. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be so much fun. And just, you know, come out and meet people. And don't worry if you're not, like, a yogi or, you know, expert meditator or anything like that. You know, we'll all be there together.
And where it's in Highland Lake. Is it where in Highland Lake?
Well, have you been to Highland Lake? There's only one. There's only one tiny little area. We're right across from the post office.
You can't miss it.
You cannot miss it. I mean, if you blink, you will miss it.
Listen for the you guys singing in the lovely tones. Also, a percentage of ticket sales are going to be donated to Delaware Riverkeeper.
Yes.
You want to talk about why you decided to do that?
Well, we all live on the Delaware River. I'm in Calicoon. And then Highland Lake is also, well, it's near Berryville, so near the Delaware River. I mean, I think everyone who lives here, I think we all love the Delaware River. So anything we can do to protect it, the environment, the wildlife, and you know, keep it clear and clean for us to tube down.
Well, we've been talking about that all morning as well. The Neverseek Management Watershed Management Plan, and then we talked to the folks in Pike County Conservation District too. So it all kind of comes together. You mentioned also that folks don't need to be advanced in their practice, I would say, or professional yogi or kirtan follower to participate.
Not at all. And so the class I'm teaching is chair yoga, which is a very gentle, accessible yoga practice. So it's done seated in the chair, and then also we'll do some poses standing if you choose to, so we can work on our balance while holding onto the chair. But anyone's, you know, welcome to participate. You can just give it a try. If a pose doesn't feel great for you, you know, you just pause and take a breath.
Yeah. And I'll be teaching a much more physically demanding practice, but I really aim to make all of my classes accessible by using what we call yoga props. I described yoga props to someone who had never been to a yoga class the other day, and they said, "What the heck is that, a towel?" And I said, "No, there are these blocks.
Water bottle.
Yeah, blocks, a strap, a blanket, a bolster, all different ways to help bring the earth up to meet you rather than twist you to meet the earth." That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that does. I think it, and I've done some yoga in the past, and those things are always kind of helpful. I would say also that I have this thinking about myself like, well, I don't need that. I can force my body into this position. But these things are actually very helpful, especially yes. as you age.
Yes. And most of the newcomers feel that same way. They're like, I don't need a prop. Why is a teacher trying to give me one? Then you see people who are advanced practitioners or possibly teachers themselves grabbing every prop.
Every prop.
Yeah.
I call it prop-a-palooza.
And, you know, before we go, we'll remind folks again about the event. Where can they get where can folks get more information about Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival and register?
Yes, you can head to yogicselfcare.com to find out more and get your ticket. We only have three tickets left.
Wow.
Because the festival is on Saturday, so I'm very excited. We'll sell out pretty quickly.
Do you think you'll do it again?
Yes.
Even before you've done it, you think you'll do it again?
Yeah, don't tell anyone, but this was kind of our test launch so that we can perfect it for a summer event. We're hoping maybe the end of August for our next round.
Wow. And where can folks get more information about you is also at yogicselfcare.com. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca?
RebeccaDeRosaYoga.com.
And would you mind, you know, playing us out here as we wrap up? Talking to Katie Bell Bulmer and Rebecca DeRosa about the Upstate Yoga and Kirtan Festival, and a little treat here, a little nice way to end our show and our morning. I'm Tim Bruno. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're on the go, and Radio Catskill can go with you. Listen live to Radio Catskill on your phone. Just type wjffradio.org into your browser and listen wherever you are. Stay up to date on local news, culture, and NPR on the go on your phone with Radio Catskill.
Psychologist Peter Gray has a message for parents and teachers. Let the kids play.
In many ways, adults have taken over children's lives. And I think the cost of that has been that it takes away from children's own opportunities to figure things out for themselves.
How to help children thrive this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. Streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, we're going to see some partly cloudy skies and maybe some showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. High near 77, could get up to 83 or low 80s in other parts of the region. Clouds and showers tonight. Some storms a little bit more numerous in the evening, a low of 52. Tomorrow, cooler, cloudy in the morning, then on and off rain showers in the afternoon. Thunderstorms also possible. High of 61. On Point is next from WBUR Boston. It's 11 o'clock.